This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. They thought it would be the making of her, the move to the big city. Violet Hulbert was a quiet girl, shy even, would linger on the edge of a group and wait for someone to talk to her, never push herself forward. When she announced to her family that she was moving to Cardiff, they were as surprised as they were delighted. It made sense. There wasn't much work for a 17-year-old girl, and she was a girl. She was a young 17, in Abergavenny at the start of the 1920s. Cardiff was busy. Cardiff was Cardiff. They went with her to the bus one day in the summer of 1922, joked that she shouldn't come back until she'd made her fortune, to make sure she married a handsome sailor. They watched as the bus drove off into the distance, Violet still waving as it drove out of sight. She found lodgings over a butcher's shop near the docks and soon found a job waitressing in a cafe. She loved it there. It was busy, boisterous and noisy. The windows permanently steamed up. The smell of frying and boiled cabbage stayed on her clothes and in her hair, but she didn't really mind, because sometimes she felt like the whole world was in there. So many sailors, so many accents, so many languages. How they smiled at her. Big, beaming smiles, creasing weathered faces full of stories, eyes sparkling, so full of life, full of the world that lay beyond South Wales. She wanted to hear all their stories, every last one. Whenever the bell tinkled over the door, she hoped it brought a new face and a new story. Then there was Jose. His eyes sparkled brighter than the rest. His smile was wider. He left tips too, which was unusual, and would wink at her when he got up to leave, which always made her blush. Before long, he was waiting outside when she finished her shift, and they'd take walks in the evenings, down by the docks. Jose would explain the differences between the different kinds of ships, seeing the beauty in them, imitating the sweep of their bows with his hands, telling Violet how they were like a home from home for him and people like him. Then he told her about his real home, in Portugal, the coastal village where he'd first fallen in love with the sea as a boy. Told her about his family, how much he missed them. And then, one night down by the docks in the spring of 1923, under a canopy of stars as the water slopped gently against the dockside and the moon made a million silver shards on the surface of the water, Jose Tejera asked Violet Hulbert to be his wife. And Violet Hulbert said yes. They had to move fast. His ship was sailing soon. It was a simple registry office wedding, April the 30th, 1923. Her parents came down from Abergavenny, her brother and sister. Her mother stood as her witness. Jose just had his friend Manuel as his best man, another crewman from the passenger steamer where Jose was a cabin steward. He wore his steward's uniform, spotlessly white. Violet gave up her job at the cafe. She loved it there, but she loved Jose more. They'd be sailing for Brazil with his ship, he told her. He had some business to attend to there, but then they would go on to Portugal and truly start their new life together. The cabin was tiny, but still bigger than her little room over the butcher's shop. She soon got used to the throb of the engines and the gentle roll of the ship. As she lay in the upper bunk, she'd listen to Jose's gentle breathing below until she drifted off to sleep. In her dreams, she would still hear the tinkle of the bell over the door of the cafe. It would be 4.5 years before Violet Hulbert saw Wales again. At the end of November 1927, she stepped from a steamer onto the quayside at Newport with little more than the clothes she stood up in and a remarkable story. She was alone when she'd arrived. She'd been alone, in fact, for almost the whole time she'd been away. They'd gone ashore at Rio de Janeiro, which is when Jose informed Violet she'd have to pay her own passage to Portugal. That seemed fair enough at first, and Violet managed to find work helping a nurse working in the slums. It was hard work and not well paid, but if it helped them get to Portugal, it was worth it. A few weeks passed, and then Violet came home one day to find Jose gone. Not a trace of him. And he'd taken everything, not even left a note. The shy teenager from Abergavenny was alone, on the other side of the world, in a country she'd have struggled to find on a map, and where she understood barely a few words of the language. She worked long hours in a climate hotter and stickier than she'd ever imagined. Before long, she was hospitalised with dehydration and exhaustion. Part of her hoped Jose might hear about it and come to see her, but he didn't. When she recovered, she found herself without a job or a home. For a few days she wandered the streets, living on bananas she found on the ground, until a family almost as poor as she was took pity and offered her a place in their home, a wooden shack that was already crowded. Before long, a turf war broke out in the district, and the shack was destroyed in the fighting. Caught in the crossfire on the streets, Violet was shot in the leg. She made it further south along the coast to Santos and found work as a coffee sorter. She lived next door to a drinking den that was subjected to either police raids or gang fights, practically on a nightly basis. It was normal for revolvers to be fired on the premises, she recalled later, and the parties that spilled out onto the street were not considered a success until shots had been exchanged. I developed the habit when this happened of scaling a tree to stay out of trouble. She took to carrying first a razor and then a revolver to defend herself until, growing tired of living in a constant state of mortal danger, Violet moved on again, further south, to the port city of Paranagua. When buying groceries one morning in 1927, Violet heard a snatch of familiar conversation, the first time she'd heard English spoken in years. Peering between partitions, she saw a group of four sailors asking directions. Clearly they'd been on an epic bender. They had that pale, waxy sheen about them of the morning after, and she could smell the previous night's booze from where she stood, several feet away. Their hatbands told her they were from a ship called the Sirius. Later that day, Violet made her way to the port, and, sure enough, there was the Sirius, a transatlantic steamer flying a British flag. For the first time since she left Cardiff, Violet didn't just see a way out. Hardened by her years in the slums, she now had the courage to act on it. Having gathered as much food and water as she could, Violet waited until the small hours and, under cover of darkness, scuttled up the gangway of the Sirius and stowed herself away in the forecastle. For a week she stayed hidden as the ship battered its way across the Atlantic, grazing on fruit and nuts as the hours ground endlessly by. Then another week passed. On day 17, achingly hungry and weak with dehydration, she hobbled from her hiding place and revealed herself to the crew. Captain Weller, a man in a thousand, provided me with a cabin, gave me plenty of food, and did everything he could to assist me, she said. When the ship docked at Las Palmas, the captain escorted Violet personally to the British consul, who arranged passage on a ship home, and some local women heard about her plight, gave her some new clothes, and collected £22 to help her start again back in Wales. From Newport, she travelled to Cardiff. There was something she wanted to do before returning to Abergavenny. The cafe had a different name now. There were new pictures on the wall, new tables and chairs, new faces behind the counter, new faces in front of the counter. Nobody recognised her. But the bell was the same. The bell that tinkled every time the door opened. The bell that had, for the last 4 years, never stopped sounding in her dreams. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Carley. Thanks for joining me for Series 3 of Coastal Stories. We are back, back, back. We're also on Twitter now. It's all the rage. You can find us there at Podcast Coastal. That's the best bet to find pictures and extra bits and pieces to go with the stories. And I'm there as well. You can find me at Charlie Connolly. Coastal Stories will always be free to listen to, but you can help us to sail through this series and even into uncharted waters beyond by donating via ko-fi.com/coastalstories. That's ko-fi.com/coastalstories. I'll put that link in the notes that go with this, and indeed every episode. You can leave the price of a pint, or, as some tremendous people have done, set up a monthly donation. Please tell people about Coastal Stories too. If you like it, that is, don't tell them it's rubbish. Leaving reviews and ratings is a big help, especially on Apple Podcasts, if you're listening there. We've had some cracking reviews so far, which have fair put my hat at a jaunty angle on the side of my head. Anything you can do to spread the word, on social media, with friends, family, even enemies, it all really helps keep the whole thing going. The waves you can hear were recorded at Deal on April 29th, 2021.